Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
Hello and welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Today on the podcast, we'll be speaking with Nancy Gretzinger, and she is now retired, but she has her doctorate in education, and she has some incredible stories to share with us regarding her journey, and both in the school system, but also personally what she's dealing with right now. So let's welcome Nancy. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So before we get started today with your story, why don't you just tell us a little bit more about who you are and some things about you?
Okay, I am a retired educator, but I have also been a classroom teacher, an assistant principal, a principal, regional director for special ed, taught classes for Arizona State University and Northern Arizona University. Among the way, I always wanted children, so I adopted a little girl from China 23 years ago, and that has also been an experience. But I had a lot of different experiences, both personally and professionally, that has shaped me into the person I am today.
Don't we all? But yes, it sounds like you have had incredible experiences, so much to learn from and for our audience to listen to. So let's get into kind of the reason why you reached out to me or to sign up for to be on this podcast. What experience did you want to focus on first?
Well, I'd like to talk about a medical experience I had. I had some mandatory surgeries, two being back surgeries, spinal cord surgeries. And so when I bought a house in Arizona and bought a pool, I was slightly incontinent, and went to a urogynecologist and went and treated for my incontinence. And she suggested this procedure with medical mesh. I'd had mandatory surgeries. I'd never had an elective surgery, and I did not do any research. What I found after the fact, I did have the surgery, and consequently, she tied the mesh too tight. 8 weeks later, it had hardened in my body, and when she went in to release it, it took her 8 hours to pick out the individual mesh that had entwined with my urethra. What I learned is the fact that she did not tell me that the FDA had issued a communication the year before that medical mesh can cause complications that can alter your life and require more surgery. So from this experience and having 8 surgeries and no longer having a urethra, having a suprapubic tube that causes urinary tract infections, I have learned that I need to be a medical advocate and encourage everyone else to be their own medical advocates too. I belong to a nonprofit organization called Mesh Victims United, and part of our awareness is educating people on mesh, and they're still encouraging mesh, and it's a petroleum chemical in your body that we feel pretty strongly about not using, but the urogynecologists feel like it's safe. So we're still battling a little bit with that. However, I'm pleased to say that I am on the inaugural committee for the Urogynecology Society POP, Pelvic Organ Prolapse Mesh Complications Patient Advisory Board. And so we're meeting with them to talk with what they can do for the mesh victims as a result of some of these things that they highly encouraged. But getting back to the advocacy, I started researching quite a bit on different areas and I looked at physicians, which physician errors and medical errors are the seventh leading cause of death in the United States, claiming over 300,000 lives a year. And part of that is not being aware of advocacy and what we need to do, and having a healthcare voice and speaking up. And there's a process called carefrontation that you can do with your doctor to let them know that you need to be listened to.
So you explain that a little bit more. First of all, that's an incredible story, and I apologize just as a healthcare provider that you had to go through that and that your life was completely changed because of this mesh. I guess if we had to find a silver lining in all of this, what you have chosen to do to now be such a voice for everybody else who is either gone through this or maybe considering a surgery that involves mesh, what a great choice for you to take up that platform. So thank you so much for having the courage to be vocal about what you have gone through and all of the pain and change in your life. But the carefrontation, that's something that I've not heard of. So explain that more.
Well, first of all, feel free to Google it if you want more information. But the process itself would be, I'm going to pretend, Christine, that you're my physical therapist and I need to talk to you. Mm-hmm. So, Christine, I've really valued our interaction. I have valued what you've done for physical therapy for me. However, I feel like I need to explain some things. Do you have a few minutes?
Yes.
I'm really concerned about some of the exercises that you're prescribing for the pelvic floor disorder and not being aware of my spinal cord injuries enough to know what is working and what is not. For example, the Kegel exercises are not working. So can we discuss that and talk about that?
Yes, Nancy, that's great. I was not aware that you weren't being benefiting from those exercises. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Well, could you suggest some other things that we could possibly do?
Yes, I think what would be important would be for me to understand where you are able to use your body, what muscles are working for you. So let's explore that a little bit more.
Okay, well, I guess I would like some exercises not only for the pelvic floor, but maybe the upper body, because my upper body strength is not the best. And if you're open to that, we can discuss that some more.
Great, I like that suggestion. I definitely want to be on board with what you're focusing on. Do you have some specific things right now that are difficult for you to do with your upper body, like things that are hard during the day?
Well, I think sometimes I might have rheumatoid arthritis because gripping is hard, and like just lifting my water bottle if it's heavy can be hard.
Okay.
Those are some of the things for carefrontation, but you know, the doctor can disagree and say, you know, I really think you're full of it. And I, you know, where did you get your, you know, physical therapy license trying to tell me what to do? Mm-hmm. And when doctors do that or physical therapists do that, I think we need to say, you know, you need to listen and hear my voice. And if you can't, then you need to think about changing your healthcare provider, because they do need to listen to you. And one of the biggest complaints we have from, whether it's my mesh sisters or women and the gender bias that we have in the healthcare system, is that the doctors don't listen.
Yes, 100%. And even as you're talking there, I could have said something like, well, you're mentioning some things that really the occupational therapist needs to work with. So I can't do your upper body. That's OT.
Exactly. And, you know, when are we treating the whole patient rather than having our blinders on and just looking at that select part of our body? And that's part of the frustration we also have with having so many specialists we see. We have to be our own medical advocate and we have to be our own medical case manager, because nobody's doing that. It's very frustrating when you have a chronic illness and you have so many different things that you're looking at that you have to start doing the research and making sure that the right things are being done.
That must seem very overwhelming.
You know, it can be, and I think it depends on what mode we're in. If we're, you know, in our superpower mode, or if we're so defeated and so tired and so depressed that we just have to go find a hole to crawl in.
Mm-hmm. And did you go through that stage, Nancy, where you just couldn't even deal with?
Well, let's talk about yesterday. No, you know, I think we're on a chronic roller coaster. I was telling you before the podcast that I use a belly bag that my suprapubic tube drains into around my stomach, and I'm having a hard time finding them. And so I have to use a full catheter bag, which kind of limits my going out unless I plug the catheter. And, you know, if I'm going to look at the silver lining, I want to not have to go to the bathroom, unplug my catheter and urinate. So that's probably getting a little TMI-ish, but that's okay.
Well, I guess when, I don't know, I've had delivered 5 babies, and by the last one, I was like, whatever, you know, at some point you just have to kind of go with it. But you have a very unique way of being able to explain all of this and be able to see all of this. And I think, like you said, all of your past experiences and have really added to your ability to understand these very complex systems, and especially the interpersonal system between the patient and the provider, that relationship. I would imagine that your background as an educator really has led to you having a better understanding of what communication needs to look like to be effective. Do you think that that's true?
Oh, I do. I do. And, you know, I think it's interesting, and I'm sure you come up against this too, you know, and I think we find this in advocacy also, is sometimes we want to make things so complicated that we forget to get down to the basic. And that is, you know, people would be talking about different things and it would be like, ask the child. You know, if they don't want to go to school, why are we trying to figure it out? Why don't we ask the child why they don't want to go to school or why they don't like this or like that? And as advocates or as patients, what do we not like about the system that we can change and be a voice? And one thing I probably didn't mention is I'm in the process of writing a book called Your Healthcare Voice, How to Reclaim Your Medical Status. And I'm going to have a healthcare podcast called Healthcare Hacks.
Nice.
One of the most interesting thing I've learned that very few people know about is the 23-hour admit. Mm-hmm. For an outpatient procedure.
Yeah.
You are aware of that, but I can tell you 2 out of 10 people that I talked to were aware of it, and the 8 were not. They'd never heard of it before.
Oh, sure. And not even, I mean, that's one small piece, but then there's, you know, so many things that these rules change, or just little things that you have to know these terms. There's so much. So I think that's wonderful, Nancy, one, to write the book, because this is information that, like you said, is not being available to people easily. 2, a podcast, how wonderful. I mean, even just me starting this podcast, I looked on Apple Podcasts to see what's out there for healthcare advocacy in general, and there isn't. So bring it on. Please do this. And if I can help you in any way, let me know. If you need issues or help with that book, I've got Jeremy Sutton and his contact. So he's a great contact for publishing. So Jeremy, if you're listening, shout out to you. That's great. This is what we need. We need to get that out there. I also heard that you did an interview for a TED Talk.
I did. I did an audition last weekend for TEDx in Tucson, and I did it on Your Healthcare Voice, and that our healthcare system is broken, but it can be fixed. And I really feel what I'm hearing is doctors have like a 20-minute time to see you. And at this OGS patient advisory committee, one of the things that the doctor talked about, I'm diverting a little bit, but I think this is important maybe for your listeners, is the fact that she has to spend time finding out how much detail the patient wants. Do they want a lot of information, or do they want no information, or in between? But the healthcare system, I talked about having several healthcare meetings to discuss from A to Z if you're having a procedure. And so the first part of that, obviously, is talking about how much detail, but going from any questions you might have, sharing anything with the doctor that you've provided the research on, and then talking about the procedure, the risks, the benefits, the immediacy. The one thing, again, I learned at the OGS Patient Advisory Committee is that you need to ask the person that's doing the procedure the volume that they've done and the complication rate. And then talk about pre-op and post-op and all those different things. And what they're going to say is meetings. And my point is, our health should be important enough to have meetings. Don't we have meetings for weddings? Don't we have meetings for preparing our kids for college and what school they're going to go to? Our financial advisor, our insurance. Why aren't we having meetings to discuss our healthcare and the process that we need to go through?
Yes. Hands down, it doesn't make sense. Like you said, it is too complicated, and the current system does not truly look out for the patient. And I, as you're going down that list, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, nope, they don't really talk about that. Nope, they're definitely not going to talk about their complication rate. That's the last thing.
And if they don't, again, you need to go on, because doctors should be just as transparent, particularly when they're talking about my health and my life. And especially since I've had a life-altering process that was totally preventable. And those errors that I talked about and those deaths are 100% preventable.
Yeah.
So we do need to start speaking up. And if the doctors aren't listening, if enough of us do that, they will listen.
Agreed. Agreed. So we've covered a lot of information here, Nancy. I appreciate, again, your candid discussion about all of this. What would you tell a friend or a family member who's kind of going through the same situation? Let's maybe just break it down to a couple of steps. They're thinking about a surgery. We talked about making sure we ask these questions to the doctor, but what comes next?
Well, I think what I would do, number one, is take someone with you to the doctor's appointment, because we individually get shocked by some of the things they tell us, and we just kind of close down even though we're present. Our mind is just going 100 miles an hour and we're not absorbing what we need to absorb. Or take a tape recorder and record it, because and take questions with you and write them down. I have found some awesome doctors that are willing to listen and talk with me. And then once you get there and you have additional questions, don't hesitate to contact the doctor again or schedule another appointment, because all your answers, all your questions should be answered before you step into that procedure room or surgical room. I probably didn't mention, after the first two surgeries, I had 8 additional surgeries. And I've had total knee replacements. I've had gallbladder surgery. So I wish I could tell you I didn't know anything about surgeries, but I do. And we need to be very cognizant and of what that looks like and how to advocate. So taking someone with you and just having all your questions answered has to be number one.
Right. I agree with you on that for sure. And both those are wonderful suggestions. If you don't have somebody to come with you, a tape recorder, if you have a cell phone, you have that voice recorder on there. And you're absolutely right. So, you know, we need to be in this calm and alert state for learning. And that's whether we're working with children or as adults. And even though we might be calm in the moment, if as soon as we start hearing some information that sounds confusing or creates some sort of emotion, you're no longer alert to what the doctor is saying. You're going off into something else in your own head, and you're not really absorbing that information. Those emotions can trigger that reflex of fear, or some people, their fear response is to shut down, like you said. So just depending on who you are.
And I think some of your points on the calm and alert might be appropriate to mention at that time, that when your mind starts going, what are some things that we can do to help bring ourselves back to be present in the moment and to hear and understand what the provider is saying?
Yeah, I think, well, for me, especially if it's a response that I start to get teary-eyed or upset about whatever the provider just told me, being okay with asking for a break. I feel that pressure of, oh, it's okay, just trying to hold it back. But taking a few minutes, and especially, I know doctors have offered it to me and I probably have declined because I felt bad, but you can't worry about somebody else's feelings. Take care of yourself. So acknowledging like, no, I do need a minute to let this go. And then
perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think too, you can take a deep breath. One of the strategies I teach the children in my emotions and action class is to use your own hand and to trace your finger up, breathe in and exhale down. And by the end of your five full breaths, you feel better. So it's kind of a silly little thing, but you always have your hand with you. So you could take those five full deep breaths. And like I said, taking that break, taking some breaths, I don't know, what other strategies would you offer?
Well, you know, the one thing you said, and here I am talking about advocacy that I think we need to do with doctors and we don't, is I think we need to acknowledge our feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, what you just said really upset me a lot and helped me understand why you're thinking I need that procedure. Explain that a little bit more. Yeah. And acknowledging what we're feeling to the doctor rather than stuffing it in. And that deep breathing obviously is important, but I think a lot of times, one of the things that I think we're all aware of the white coat syndrome in regards to blood pressure, but the other second part of the white coat syndrome is that the doctor takes any silence as acknowledgement and acceptance of what he has said. Mm-hmm. So when we allow the doctor to continue and not acknowledge that that has upset us, he thinks it's okay.
That's a very good point. And I can tell you myself, so like I said, when you hit that threshold and you get to that fear response, or a feeling, a perceived feeling of not being safe, essentially, and we don't have to call it fear, but that you're sensing danger. You're either going to freeze, you're going to flee, you're going to fight, or you're going to faint. And I tend to freeze or faint. And you're exactly right. I shut down. I don't even know what to say. So if I have hit that threshold, that would totally be me in a doctor's appointment. The doctor would have no clue what's going on with me. I have to take out an emotion wheel and I have to look at that wheel to name my emotion. So for me, I have to have that visual in front of me to decide, what am I feeling right now? And building that awareness, if you don't have a good sense of what emotions are or how to name them, like I think it, generally we just say, oh, I'm good, or I'm bad, I'm not doing so good today. Well, what does that mean? I'm not doing so good, or I'm okay. That doesn't really mean anything. How is the doctor or the other healthcare provider supposed to help you work through that if you're just like, yeah, I'm okay? So that's important.
Well, you're absolutely right. And as a side note, when I adopted my little girl from China and, you know, living with her throughout the years, I thought she had a significant auditory processing problem. And I took her to a neuropsychologist, and he explained about the amygdala and the flight, fright, or fear. Mm-hmm. And she did the fear. Mm-hmm. And I did not realize that. And that was real eye-opening, because in any anxiety or stressful situations, she just totally shut down. And the teachers looked at that as an ADHD kind of thing, or in actuality, it wasn't. And then they weren't very patient with her, not understanding all that. And obviously, I didn't either. So that fear is a real factor that we need to identify a little bit more and acknowledge and understand.
Yep. Yes, I have a little sheet here that I'm working on, the funnel of feelings. I know you guys can't see that on the audio, but one pile is needs not being met, and the other pile of sand is needs being met. And we get stuck in that fear response, we automatically go down that funnel of needs not being met, and game over. And it presents in a whole different variety of ways. And like you said, This is really the crux of all of this, and this is how we get to communication. This is how we get to a sense of belonging. And so I appreciate this conversation, Nancy, because I think that this is very important to acknowledge. Let's see, what else would you like to talk about today?
Well, one thing I mentioned earlier, and I know we're running out of time, is the fact that as an educator, there are certain things that we can look at in the classroom that are going to help students. And sometimes as educators, not being aware of different things that can actually be not a positive environment for students would help. For example, I call it dangling feet, and that is when children are all at the same desk height and chair height and their feet dangle, and teachers want to know why kids are squirming, and it's because they're not grounded. So that's a whole nother topic, and another day, another time. But the advocacy is so important, and I know you do children advocacy also, and I just think we need to really know how to communicate effectively in the healthcare process, so we are getting our needs met and not having fear and getting that addressed. And our healthcare system has to come along with it. And if not, we need to revolutionize it and speak up and speak out.
Absolutely. That's very, very important. I bet in your healthcare hacks podcast, you could definitely include some of those little educational classroom tips. Because to me, healthcare and educational environment are so intertwined. I mean, I know they are two different places, but really the health and well-being of our children, even if you're in a school, it doesn't really matter where you are. It's still there.
Well, and we think of health as being failing health rather than good health, and we need to look at that totally.
That's very true, and I do think that our healthcare system is more of a sick care system, and when we look at it from that approach, we're looking at trying to be reactive and not proactive. My husband's a police officer, and he deals the same thing. You know, we're reactive. Let's look at how we can be proactive in our communities. And anyway, that's also another topic.
And you know what? If you talk to him when he is in a situation with someone that's kind of not communicating well, he uses that care frontation process. He talks about, you know, why we have a problem. What do you think we need to do to solve it? And so he does a care frontation process. He doesn't call it that. It's a calming, de-inflating situation.
Right.
A crisis intervention kind of thing.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, I think, again, when we look at all of this, like I said, we are all sensory beings. We all gain information from our environment. We have 10 senses, and we're constantly needing to filter that. The stimulus comes in, we have a feeling, an emotion, a thought, a reaction, and that is, I don't care if you're 2 or you're 102. This process happens, and we need to be able to, in order to move through our day, in order to be successful, we have to be in that needs being met column. And the more we spend in needs not being met, we are stuck. So it doesn't matter whether you're out there as a police officer or as a nurse or a physical therapist or a doctor or as a patient, we are people. So, and you're absolutely
exactly
right. Yeah, you're absolutely right with the silos. I mean, that's a whole nother topic. I wanted to bring up Dr.
Our work is cut out for us, Christine.
Yes.
Work is cut out for us.
Totally. I see that we'll be having many more conversations, Nancy. Do you know Dr. Wayne Jonas?
Say it again.
Dr. Wayne Jonas.
Say the doctor's name again.
Sorry, Wayne Jonas, Jonas.
I do not.
I'm going to put his link into the podcast here, and I'll encourage you to look him up. He has a whole framework that sounds a lot like this carefrontation process, and he has a lot, I forget how he has a term for it that doctors can actually bill for it the way that he's describing. So when you talk about that whole 20-minute window that they have to like talk with you, well, if you approach it in the way that Dr. Jonas is talking about, that they can bill for that time. I think I understand that from the provider side, there is this demand to be productive and to see all your patients. And if you're not getting reimbursed for it, there's less of a drive for the provider to do the right thing. And that's horrible. I'm not saying that that's an excuse, but what Dr. Jonas is saying is that here's a way that doctors can actually bill for their time and provide the care and support that they need for their patients. So I think he has some really good resources that align with what you're doing.
Great, thank you.
For sure. Lastly, self-care. Nancy, what are you doing right now, or what would you like to include in a self-care routine?
Wow, a self-care. I think number one, taking time for yourself and acknowledging to yourself what your needs are. Yesterday, I have to be honest, I kind of totally shut down. And I pretty much told people, leave me alone. I don't want to interact. I don't want to talk. I appreciate that you love me and that, you know, all this other stuff, but I needed to shut down and just be myself and take that time for myself. And I guess we need to tell people that, and if they accept it, fine, and if they don't, that's okay too. But we need to take care of ourselves, and we need to look at what we need. And the other thing I guess I would suggest is, when I am so depressed, I can't reach out. But when I'm not and I'm up a little bit more, reach out to your friends. I think what really bothers me the most, when I talk to people, they say, oh, I can't do that. And I said, well, if you were in that situation and you wanted them to reach out to you, you would certainly be extending that hand. Why can't you extend that hand when you need it? And it's interesting. It's very hard for people to do that.
Yes. I think it's the same thing about most advice. It's very easy to dole out the advice. It's much more difficult to be that self-reflection and make a decision that that you would expect somebody else to make for themselves. And a lot of these emotions kind of get us stuck. There's a great book by Joan Rosenberg. It's called 90 Seconds to a Life You Love. And with the 90 seconds part is talking about moving through an uncomfortable emotion. So she's not saying you're going to fix your life in 90 seconds, but she's saying that you're going to ride this wave of emotion. So when you feel this emotion of sadness or hopelessness, that if you do sit with that for about 90 seconds, as you feel that emotion, that's the length of time that the neurotransmitters in your brain are active and processing. And if you can actually allow yourself to move through that difficult emotion, it will get easier for you to deal with it. So it doesn't make the emotion go away, and it doesn't change your circumstances, but how you react to that emotion can change, and you can get better at handling those emotions so that you don't get stuck in that place where you can't reach out. You feel like it doesn't matter, because what you just said, when you feel like you need a space to be quiet, acknowledge it and yay, but then to be able to move through that and come back into the world and find connection. So, you know, you and I are talking now via the internet, but I feel a very strong connection to you, Nancy, even though I'm not with you, and I hope you do the same. But this is what helps us move on to more of that higher meaning and purpose, is to have this belonging, the sense of connection with somebody else. So that's so important for healing.
It is very important. And in the mesh community, many of those mesh sisters have isolated themselves and trying to move on. And like you said, interconnect and move through those stages of grief and saying goodbye to the old you and hello to the new you is so vital when you have a life altering situation.
Absolutely. And what you just said is important too. So you're not necessarily grieving the loss of like something, you know, like somebody died, but you still are grieving a life that is not the same anymore. And you're absolutely right. That is something to grieve. And thank you for acknowledging that. And I don't have that particular experience, so I can't share that exact emotion with you. But like you said, you can have other people in these Facebook communities, in your advocacy groups. So wonderful if you're out there dealing with something, reach out to somebody who's been in a similar situation. And I think sometimes in these support groups, it can get kind of negative, where you're feeding into this negativity. So
exactly.
Can you speak to how somebody can come out of that negative space and look for more of a uplifting or encouraging mode or guide?
Well, I think what happens is some people like the negativity and thrive in that. And I feel for them because I know our bodies in stress are not healthy. And so, you know, I forget the expression about not my circus, not my monkey, but it's acknowledging where you need to be. And negativity really doesn't belong in our lives for a long period of time. And some people might say, if ever, but that has to be an individual thing. Acknowledgement of where you are and where you need to be. And that grieving process is for any life-altering situation. It could be divorce. It could be children leaving the home. It could be any life-altering event. And acknowledging that, and then where that's healthy for them and where it should be healthy for you. So I guess on some of these Facebook groups, you need to not go in there, or you need to take a Facebook break for a day several days or a week, because if you're not getting positive information and you're not getting positive affirmations, is that where you want to be?
Right, right. Agreed. And I have left groups for that exact reason.
I think that's what we need to look at too, is how many groups do we need to be in?
Yeah.
Find that group that's serving your need, and then exclude the ones that aren't.
Yeah. Just like you would do with actual in-person friends. We want to surround ourselves with people who are encouraging and supportive.
Exactly. We have really gone the gamut, and I have so enjoyed it and appreciate the knowledge and expertise that you have shared. Thank you.
Oh, likewise. Seriously, I am thinking I'm very lucky to be speaking with you, because just for our listeners to understand, for the most part of my 23 podcast episodes that I have recorded, they have all been friends of mine or people I know, and I don't know Nancy for anything, and she reached out to me and signed up on my podcast link. So I encourage anybody out there who has a story to please reach out to me. You can find my Sign Up Genius link in the show notes. And this has been a fantastic conversation. So please share this out with your friends, family members. And thank you so much, Nancy, for joining me today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
Yes, you as well.
Hey there, it's Christine from the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Would you like to be featured on this podcast and share your healthcare advocacy story? Then sign up on the Sign Up Genius link under the description of this podcast, and we'll talk soon. Hey, it's Christine, host of the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast, and I wanted to just talk with you today about a volunteer organization I started about 6 weeks ago for parents who are in the hospital with their kiddos who are sick after a surgery or perhaps as a newborn. And this is called Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support Hotline, and it's a way for parents to connect with other parents who have been there before. So Kristen Parsons and I have hooked up together to get this started here in Denver, and we are off to a great start with a nice group of volunteers willing to talk with parents who are currently in the hospital. Now we need a little more support to get us actually in the hospitals, get our name and phone number available to as many people as possible, not only here in Denver, but across the United States. So please help us by sharing this episode and letting people know about Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support. And also, there will be some advertisements coming on the podcast here to help us with our funding for different supplies and advertising materials. So that's what we're using the money for. If you have any questions, I'll be putting the link to the hotline in the show notes. And thank you so much for your support.